What I would like to start with today is something that I was reflecting upon this week, which I hope is pertinent and relevant to all of you, but to everybody, not just to you, and definitely for me. At the foundation of every philosophy, there is an agreed and established upon approach. It can be ontological approach, which means it's dealing with the essential properties of what's real, what's existing, what beings are, what's the principle of beings, or it could be epistemological. We've used those terms before, ontological, epistemological. Epistemological is more dealing with how we know what things are, how we find what our knowledge is, how we learn about things, or rather we could say studying a method of gaining knowledge. So just to say this very oversimplified, ontology is like saying, this is the way it is. Epistemology is like saying, oh, we have to study this to understand why this is the way it is. Okay, does everybody understand that? Do you understand the difference between the two? Okay, so for example, in theistic religions, those are religions that have gods in them, they ask us to accept the existence of a supreme being, a god or a goddess or several, as the source of reality and all our experiences in life and how we live our life. It could be a monotheistic belief system, as the Abrahamic traditions are, or it could be a pantheistic belief system, as the ancient Greeks were, or the Hindu religion is, although Hindu religion is kind of, depending who you talk to, some will call it monotheistic, some will call it pantheistic. But still, fundamental to all theistic religions is a requirement to accept a god or gods as the source of information and the moral and ethical code. Another approach to a philosophy is the dialectic approach, and that's very much like Taoism. It tells us that we live in a world that's the result of the interplay of two complementary but different principles, yin and yang. And their interaction with each other creates reality, manifests reality. And therefore, understanding that dynamic, we'll understand reality and understand how to live in reality. Okay, so far so good. So we're talking theism over here, we're given the information. Taoism over here, which is dialectic, there's two principles. We have to adjust to those two principles. Then, for example, there are other philosophies. And they're like the animists. Animists believe that there's a separate spirit in each object that's both an animate and inanimate object. They have their own spirits, and we pray and bless them in return for good luck and good fortune. Now, Japanese Shinto religion, which is similar to Taoism on the outside, puts a lot of emphasis on the spirits in trees and in rocks and things like that. So they have a bit of animism in them. Many indigenous shamanic systems are based on animism. Native Americans based on animism. And Bon, which was the religion in Tibet before Buddhism came to Tibet, is also based on animism. And many aspects of animism actually have integrated into some aspects of monotheistic religions. In Christianity, especially in Christianity, because Christianity was formed taking a lot of influence from the Greeks and the Greek pre-Christian beliefs, but also in Judaism and also in Islam. So these are different aspects. Again, fundamental to these approaches are requirements to accept on faith the central theme or principle before learning how to proceed in life. Even in Taoism, they're asking you to accept and agree that yin and yang are the essential fundamentals, and the dynamic between the two is what we have to learn about. Correct? Understood? Okay, so we're given this, here's the material, accept this and live according to this. So far, so good, right? Okay. But I think we could loosely group those into a group and say those are ontological based philosophies. And here I'm putting religion in with philosophy as well, because to me, I'm defining philosophy as an ethical moral structure with which you're going to follow to live your life, however you decide to describe it. Now, when we look at non-ontological or epistemological approaches, what do we find? Well, a good example is science. Rational science is very epistemological. It looks at how things are constructed, how we put together, where do we get information from. I hear things, then I can digest them, then I can digest mentally, and then I can think about them, I can relate to them, reason, so to speak. Okay, so when we say something is Cartesian or Aristotelian from Aristotle, we are usually more in the degree of epistemological, but also Buddha Dharma. Buddha Dharma is extremely epistemological. Now, the Buddha did not teach anyone that one has to accept anything on faith, but rather by practicing it and experiencing it for themselves. I've said this many times. I'm sure you're tired and you'll hear it many times more from me. I try to emphasize all the time. No doubt some Buddhist religions, some Buddhisms, have faith-based practices. Like, for example, the ones that I believe Nichiren is a faith-based practice. They give you Namo Renge Kyo and they tell you chant this and you'll be happy, and you have to just have faith that this will happen because that's what it is. And it does happen for some people, but whether it happens because it's true or because that stimulates part of their brain to work, interact with the world around them to bring more happiness to them, that's a discussion that could take a whole day. But in the oldest teachings that we ascribe to the Buddha, there is no evidence of take this on faith, trust me. It's always, this is the method, I practice it, I realize it, I recognize it. If you practice it, it will work. And if it doesn't work, don't waste time with it. Not in those words, but more or less is what he said. And this is a very different perspective that the Buddha Dharma has from any other philosophy. It's fundamentally based on a practice of living ethically. We've talked about that, sila, understanding the nature of reality, which one accomplishes through samadhi sitting and vipassana sitting, and what comes along with them, which are the jhanas, which open our understanding and ability to grasp the essential natures of reality. Or essential nature of realities, or natures of realities. Plural, singular, understood so far? Okay, so what that means is that the Buddha Dharma is not trying to give us something to believe in. The Buddha Dharma is saying, here's a method, here's a practice. First of all, practice it and figure it out and start to get some practical experience. Then through your practice, you'll start to realize certain things. Now, the philosophy or the teaching aside from the practical side is also important because it gives one a context with which to place the practice. So for example, the Buddha taught that all things are transitory. They're compounded creations resulting from conditions which lead to their arising. All those words you guys know now. We spent a lot of time on that. Transitory, compounded creations resulting from conditions which lead to their arising. Right? If the conditions change, then so does the result. Clear? Cannot be that conditions change, the result doesn't change. Impossible in Buddha Dharma. Conditions give rise to arising, and what arises is dependent on conditions. So something can only arise from a condition which leads to its arising. Therefore, he spelled out in his way the whole theory of paticca-samuppada, which is dependent origination, to explain to us how things go from condition to arising to dependence to condition to arising. Everything is dependent on a condition for it to arise. Okay? Understanding that there is nothing permanent, that's a Nietzsche, impermanence, not on faith, but by questioning and analyzing and reflecting on what one experiences. It wasn't said, here, nothing is impermanent except that, like this is what God has said. It's nothing is permanent. Now, practice, analyze it, think about this, reflect on your own experience. Can you find something permanent? And then one's instructed that there's no such thing as a permanent soul. Because if there's nothing that's permanent, and you reflect and you realize that there can't be a permanent soul. That would be an exception. We know by now by science, nothing in the universe is permanent, not even the sun. 10 billion years, but it's not permanent. And then from that, one is led to the logical, very important, I underline this word, logical conclusion that if one leads life in a manner which presumes permanence, meaning thinks things are permanent, and a permanent soul, you will inevitably experience existential suffering, or what they call dukkha. See how it's very logical. It's not a religion, it's not take on faith. It doesn't mean you have to give up other religions. You can believe in whatever you want. The Buddha is teaching a practical methodology to have insight into the nature of reality, not a belief system. And in order to understand this and to solve the problem of existential suffering, we're introduced to the Four Noble Truths, which is, of course, the first one is existential suffering is unavoidable if living under the false assumptions of impermanence and no permanent soul. Okay? Meaning, if not understanding that there is impermanence and there's no permanent soul. Its origin is the craving, or the adhesion, the sticking to something, or the craving for or adhesion to avoiding something, or the craving for or adhesion to hold on to something because I don't want to lose it, or the craving or adhesion for I don't want to experience something. I never want to experience that. You understand? One is I want something. One is I don't want something. One is I don't want to lose something. One is I never want to have that. Clear? That's all. Those are all different parts of that craving, that adhesion. One is informed by the Buddha that following logically, if you can eliminate the craving and break the adhesion, two, then the existential suffering will diminish and could be possibly eradicated permanently. Finally, one is then offered the fourth noble truth, which is the introduction of a method to accomplish this, which is the introduction of the Eightfold Noble Path. Okay? So I've just pretty much done a review of some basic essential fundamentals of the Buddha's teaching. Why now? Why this class? One, because we're going to do a sutra that's very important related to craving. That's what tanha means. But also, I feel that it's important to understand that the fundamental to the Buddha's message was not a belief in something. Not even oneself. So for me, when I hear a lot of the New Age philosophy saying, oh yeah, I'm learning to believe in myself. Well, what does that really mean? And if they can give me a logical explanation that doesn't mean they're actually believing in themselves, then that's fine. But most people are taught to believe in themselves, so they need to have this tremendous confidence, and it becomes like a true faith, a true belief in oneself, rather than a journey of exploration through examination, questions, and practices, which would reveal and unmask the very way reality works, which is what the Buddha is offering us. Conditions, results, effects, more results, and the transitory nature, and then arriving at for a human being to free oneself from existential suffering, which leads to unhappiness, ill health, and pain. One simply needs to understand and put into practice a method which will allow one to see reality as it is and participate in a life free of delusions.
So I have a question.
Sure.
So accepting this impermanence,
mm-hmm.
really not believing it, but just living it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you believe it or don't believe it. It's if you can believe there's impermanence, but you live like everything's permanent, this is the classic contradiction. So I accept impermanence. Okay, so my house just burned down. Oh, what am I going to do? I'm finished. Well, why? It's impermanent. Mountains fall, trees fall down. When, of course, there's suffering, there's pain, there's unpleasant experience. But that doesn't mean that you have to attach to it because you know it's there. When it will happen, when it'll happen, when it won't happen, that's difficult to know. It's almost like if you think about the waves and water. The waves are going to come no matter what. The question is how you ride the waves. That's a metaphor that's been used very often, surfing the waves of life. That's what the Buddha is trying to teach. Does that answer the question? Other questions? Is that clear? Okay, good. So does that make the sutta of this week a little bit more logical? Good, good. I'm glad it helped. Okay, so let's go to the sutta of this week. Yes, Tiziana, go ahead.
Just the believing yourself and knowing yourself. Obviously, they're two completely different things.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So, okay. No, just that. Okay. That's what well, you know.
In fact, I'd like to segue from that into just to make a little footnote there.
Yeah.
About Socrates. Socrates' line was know yourself.
Yeah.
There was no belief emphasized by Socrates. Know yourself. Question yourself.
But if you know yourself, then consequentially, you should be more, you should believe in yourself more. Let's use a game of words. But yeah, if you know yourself, you should be more sure of who you are, what you are.
Right. That's confidence.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to be careful because belief is something that I'm using in terms of something that's not based on any reason. Okay. It's something that we're told we have to do as opposed to confidence in something that because you have the experience. I'll give you a good example. It's a classic example. I believe that we have landed a man on the moon because I know the organization, I know the situation, I've seen the films, I have a fair amount of experience in understanding who these people are. So I believe it. I can never know it because I wasn't on the moon. I wasn't there at Cape Canaveral when they launched the rocket. I wasn't there when the rocket landed back on this Earth. I wasn't there, but I believe it. I believe the pictures from the space station are real. You know, so in that way, I say it's a belief because I have information, but it's a informed belief. It's not something that I would say I can actually be 100% confident in because I haven't experienced it. Right. Whereas when you practice something that you experience, you should, as a result of it, have 100% confidence of it. So for example, warrior pose in yoga, okay? Warrior pose is not an easy pose to do. And if you have a bad back, it's definitely not a good pose to do. So you do warrior pose and you have a bad back. So someone says, wow, warrior pose, that's the greatest pose in the world. I love that pose. Another person says, sorry, my back goes out every time I do that pose. So my experience is not the same as your experience. So I can believe that your experience is good with that pose. But for me, I know if I do warrior pose, I'm going to have a bad back for days. Okay. Now, some people like to rationalize that away by saying, oh, you're just not doing it right, or you haven't done it long enough. All that is just palabra. It doesn't mean anything. What means something is that I have pain in my back when I do this pose. And unless somebody can help me not have pain, a teacher or someone can show me how not to have pain with it, then I shouldn't be doing that pose. Make sense?
Yeah. So at the end of it is, the more you know yourself, the more you are confident in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it.
Exactly what the Buddha is also trying to say. The more you practice ethically, vipassana or samadhi, the more your time you spend in the jhanas, or that's the being in the deep state of dhyana or zen or chan, the more you will have confidence in the teaching. Because if you don't practice, how can you have confidence in the teaching? Even if logically all makes sense, how can one have practice confidence in the practice if one doesn't experience it oneself?
Of course.
You need to hear it yourself, experience it yourself. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, because you need to experience it physically. The only way we can experience things. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Other questions before we go on to the sutta?